Hey, Bankless Nation, it is the fifth week and last week of September, and you know what time it is? David, tell them. What time is it?
Roll-up time. Time to roll up the entire week of crypto, which, like I always say, is an ambitious endeavor in this industry. An insane amount of things happen every single day, and we are going to roll up the last week of September here on this Friday, Bankless Weekly Roll-Up. Ready, Ryan?
Yep, I'm ready. Enjoy this with your cup of coffee, guys. And David, it looks like you've had a few cups of coffee. Looking good, man. You're back in your place, right? Off the road.
Yeah, in stark contrast to a very, very tired hotel room weekly roll-up, I'm back in San Diego with my setup, with my coffee in the morning, multiple cups of coffee today. So yeah, it's going to be a fun weekly roll-up this week.
All right, guys, we have so much to cover. I think we're going to hit the China ban. They banned crypto for the 500th time, but this time maybe they mean it. We're going to get into that. We're also going to touch on NFTs on Twitter. Is this the new blue check mark? We got to talk about Virgil Griffith as well, guys. So this is going to be a jam-packed roll-up for you.
A bunch of cool things mixed in with some unfortunate things. And the China ban actually has some silver linings, which we're about to get into the market section. The Virgil Griffith story, no silver linings there. So you're going to hear some frustration coming out of me and Ryan later in the show. But I think that the coolest thing is Twitter, led by Jack Dorsey, who only talks about Bitcoin, is did two things. Like you said, one was integrate NFTs on their platform so you can get your verified NFT. And you can also tip with Bitcoin now with Twitter. So they're doing two things. One's Ethereum focused, one's Bitcoin focused. I wonder which one the market will like more in the future. We will see.
Well, I can't wait to talk about that some more. So we're going to get into those items. A few announcements we need to share with you. So if today you're listening to this, it is Friday, October 1st, then that means discounts have just launched for Permissionless. So Permissionless is a DeFi conference. We are putting this on with our friends at Blockworks. I think it's going to be the biggest DeFi party of 2020. Two, and you guys need to be there. This is going to be in Florida. Where are we headed, David?
West Palm Beach.
That's right. Yeah. Almost forgot. And so what they're doing with the ticket rollout is they're rolling out 250 at a time. So every 2 weeks, 250 new tickets get issued up. They get snapped up quickly. If you are a Bankless Premium member, you can get the tickets at 30% off. Every 2 weeks, tickets increase in price. I think it's $300 and something. But if you're a Bankless Premium, you get $95 off this week. So if you're interested in coming with us, partying in Florida, then check this out in the show notes and jump on Permissionless Train.
As the resident conference goer here, it's no surprise that Ryan forgot where we were going. But yeah, Ryan is actually going to be there too as well.
I'll be there by iPad, or am I actually attending in person? We haven't discussed this yet.
I mean, you don't live too far away from West Palm Beach. So
yeah, okay. I'm going to be there in person, guys. Definitely. Yeah.
It's been a ton of fun organizing this event with the Blockworks team. They definitely understand that crypto conferences aren't just about the conferences and more about how it's a cultural festival. So if you've never been to a crypto conference before, don't think of it like a boring conference. Think of it something much more closer to a festival of the arts, a festival of culture. There's going to be the actual conference with actual like good content and talks, but then after the fact, it's going to be just a bunch of good vibes. So looking forward to that. Bankless is going to throw a party? Question mark? I have to convince Ryan of this. I haven't talked about it to him yet, but
you sent it to me in Discord. I was definitely down. I haven't commented on that, but guys, we are throwing a party. Right. Absolutely. So all be right, there. Cool. Also, NFT gallery, they're gonna have like tons of cultural things too. So make sure you check this out. One last thing on this is we're working a little bit with the sponsor team, and there's been a ton of interest from prospective sponsors, but we want some DeFi sponsors to partake in sponsorship. So if you are interested in being a DeFi sponsor, we've got a lot on the list. We want the premium. We want the cream of the crop DeFi sponsors to show their force at this conference. Then ping one of us. I don't know, DM us or something, and we'll get you in touch with the right people.
We have. We are just holding the floodgates of the dam of centralized companies who are all are chomping at the bit, right? But like DeFi companies generally, don't have the opportunity or don't like think about this as like as a place to like get their branding out, because like generally DeFi companies have their own community to help support their branding, but like let me tell you, if the DeFi companies don't take it, the CeFi companies absolutely will. So we're holding the doors closed on the CeFi companies.
We're making room.
So like, come talk.
For you guys.
Come talk.
Also, this is like an offer that I think you have maybe three more days before if you're listening to this. If you become a Bankless premium member by Sunday, in the next 3 days, you get a Bankless t-shirt. This is the Bankless Essential t-shirt. It's the one I'm wearing right now, the one David and I are displayed in many of our shows. All you have to do, I think the value on this is like $28. All you have to do is sign up for Bankless Premium. You can see the benefits. We'll include a link in the show notes, but it's a full market opportunity report every Monday. You get to hang out with the crew in the Inner Circle Discord chat, podcast debriefs. You're not catching all of the podcasts unless you are Bankless Premium. David and I do extra podcasts after the show and release that on a Bankless Premium feed. Alpha leak emails. You would have known about DYDX in advance if you got these emails. Also, a 30% discount to the conference we were just talking about and an NFT badge. All of that is included in Bankless Premium.
The newsletter is designed to pay for itself. So don't get left behind.
All you need is one alpha leak and it's like a 10x return. Right. I tell you, we'll get to one of those alpha leaks later. But lastly, we got to talk about Xerion, David. So Xerion wants us to get the word out to you. They are doubling down on NFTs, tripling down on NFTs. I think we are looking, you probably use Xerion for your like your DeFi user interface to do. Like for me, Xerion is like a go-to tool. I can't be without it. But right now I'm displaying on screen one of David's ETH addresses, and I'm seeing a lot of NFTs in this address. Yeah, and these are your NFTs, right?
Please ignore the Fidenza rocks, which are 100% scams that I thought that like, I thought it was going to be like
the 80s. Can you delete these yet?
I need to send them away from my portfolio. So please ignore the Fidenza rocks. They are scams. Do not buy them. I got rugged. But here are my flowers. Look at my flowers, Ryan. Wait, you just scrolled right by my fantastic flower collection.
I'm sorry,
punk, dude. The portfolio gets better as you go along, right?
So, we're looking at flowers.
Here are my flowers. The black and white ones are the rare ones, fun fact. But I really like that rose one in the middle here. And then if you keep on scrolling, also ignore those. Those are bad. I need to also get rid of those. Generative Mass, some Cyber Kongs, the London EIP-1559 gift, my Pudgy Penguins, which are super cute. Penguins. They both look a little rare. And then, of course, finishing off is the CryptoPunk 1118. Also, you can see it right behind me. Xerion doing a really good job making an NFT portfolio interface alongside your DeFi portfolio.
Sir, no turtles in this portfolio yet. What are you doing, man? You sleeping on turtles still? Tiny turtles?
I'm absolutely sleeping on turtles. As soon as I see a turtle in my Twitter feed, I put it away.
You mute, you block.
I mute the turtles. Instantly. Yeah. Uh-huh.
You know what's awesome about this too is I haven't used this yet, but you can actually configure this interface to display an NFT through Xerion on your Apple Watch too. So something else to check. Another way to flex when you're off your screen, when you're just out in public, it becomes like your NFT Rolex, just like that with the new NFT features that Xerion is adding. So if you're interested in checking that out, we'll include a link in the show notes. Thanks to Xerion for sponsoring this message.
Yeah, cheers. So that Galaxy Egg is dope.
Fidenza rocks, man. That's awesome. No, I love that.
The Fidenza rocks are not awesome.
You are proud of them. All right, guys, we're going to get to the markets next. David, you want to start with Bitcoin markets?
Bitcoin starting the week at roughly $44,000, got up to the high price of $45,000, and then it has fallen after that. Down, hit the lows of roughly $41,000 a number of times throughout the week, and then it has reclaimed $43,200 at the time of recording. Generally flat, down 1% on the week. Unexciting.
It's a good day when Bitcoin is above 40K. That's what I say.
Yeah, every 10K, right?
Yeah, every 10K, absolutely. How about ETH? How's
ETH,
it doing?
ETH starting the week at roughly, $3,000. Got smacked pretty hard, fell all the way down to $2,750, where we did see some liquidations. Reclaimed $3,150 twice inside of the week. And then also fell again twice inside of the week down to $28,000, where we are now almost trying to get our heads right above $3,000 at the time of recording. So some volatility this week between 2,750 and 3,150.
A lot of volatility.
A lot of volatility. Yeah,
I think this is pretty crazy. We're back to the chop. Are we back to the crab season once again? I thought we were almost out of that at the end of the summer. September was looking promising. Now it's let me down in the second half. What's going on, David?
Well, we have a bunch of FUD, right? So we have like this the regulatory FUD that scared a lot of people. We also had China banning crypto, which apparently the market is actually reacting to this time, which is like a first since 2017. And then there was this whole like treasury debacle, insider trading, like insecurity in the legacy markets. The traditional markets got hammered this week. The first day that legacy markets got hammered, crypto fell right in parallel with it. The second day, which was today, I believe, today or yesterday, crypto markets have instead become resilient to that. So like, I think crypto markets are done being scared and they're now just kind of waiting for everything else in the world to solidify so they can like finally show some strength. I think, like I always think this, crypto markets want to show strength. There's just been like a bunch of FUD in the last week or so. So many coming from so many different directions. And so like once the rest of the world can just deal with that, I think we can resume bullishness. That's my take.
Yeah, I still feel like, David, we are in like a major bull trend, right? If this kind of level of FUD had happened during a bear market when everyone's pessimistic, I mean, crypto would have tanked and it would have stayed down for a while. The fact that we're even kind of seeing this volatility and rebounding, it still indicates to me we're in this secular bull market.
Yeah, we are not hitting new lows. We are getting FUD and we are not hitting new lows. Yeah.
I do think that the fourth quarter's, generally it's been good for crypto, particularly in bull years. So we'll see how this fourth quarter pans out, but it still could be good for crypto. We'll keep you updated every Friday as we do. All right, let's talk about this. Updates on the ETH to Bitcoin ratio. What's going on here?
Nothing too much. I believe last week it was at 0.07 something something, and right now we are at 0.069. So flat on the week for ETH BTC.
There's rumors of like a Bitcoin ETF in October. Remember Raoul Paul said that? Bitcoin has shown some resilience, some strength. I wonder if it's kind of feeding on that rumor. I wonder if we'll actually see something. I've been waiting for like a kind of a mea culpa from Gensler to just be like, here's an olive branch, crypto, your ETF. I hate you in all of these other ways, but I'm going to give you this ETF. Maybe that's going to happen in October. That could shed some light. Or that could give some life to Bitcoin, but we'll have to see.
Absolutely. The two faces of Gary Gensler, the nice face we haven't seen yet. So maybe that one does come on.
Come on, Gary. Help us out here. All right. DeFi Pulse. This is lower than I've seen for a while. Yeah. So we're at $68 billion total locked value. I think it's because crypto has gotten sort of pummeled in the last quarter.
You know, I actually think that might be a bug on DeFi Pulse, because if you look at the chart, that chart is definitely above $80 billion.
Yeah, it is.
So there's a little bit of a discrepancy there. Sometimes the DeFiPulse.com front end does experience some bugs just because like there's so many different ways to count.
So what's the
data.
Real number? Is $81 billion, then, it looks like, on the graph.
We'll that's the higher one. So we'll go on that one as the source of truth. $81 billion locked in DeFi.
When in doubt, skew bullish, folks. Crypto's in a 10-year secular bull market.
Wait,
again,
Ryan, you're giving away all of our bankless secrets.
Let's look at ETH locked in DeFi, though. That's where I think this chart gets interesting. I'll focus on the chart. We're at 7.8 million ETH locked in
which
DeFi.
Which is an all-time high.
This is an all-time high.
I think that's true.
Let me scan out. Yeah. No. Close. Super close. Okay.
Yeah. Count it. Tied.
All-time high since April, right?
Yeah.
And really close to the all-time high ever. So that's a good sign. I think it's nice for ETH to become more reliant on this much more trustless piece of collateral rather than all of kind of the stable coins that we've seen going around the ecosystem. So, okay, how about DeFi Pulse Index? Where are we at with DeFi tokens themselves?
Yeah, the DeFi Pulse Index started the week at roughly, can you go to the 1 week chart? Started the week at $327, hit the high of the week at 348, and the low was 275. Again, you're seeing a lot of that volatility in the DPI token, ending the week at $304, overall down 6% on the week.
All right, now we're going to take a look at this chart, which is the ratio of DPI to ETH. It's not DeFi season yet, David?
No, it's what flat. Last week it was at 0.1. This week it's at 0.1. So we are flat on the week with some inter-week volatility as well. But
you sound sad about that. You sad about that? You want DeFi season to come back?
I do want DeFi season. It's always so much fun. But like NFTs just don't stop being bullish. And so like all the attention keeps on going there.
Yeah, we should start putting some NFT in indices on this. Like, I don't know the best one.
DeFi NFT infrastructure to come out. People need to start using fractional more so we can stop talking about the floor price, because the floor is just such a terrible metric to actually measure totally the value of these things. If there's a bankless listener out there who has a good idea for a consistent metric we could use to talk about the value of NFT markets over time, let us know.
We've seen some indices, but nothing that has kind of the mind share of something that we would need to report on this like prestigious, right, high journalist integrity media outlet, which Bankless is.
Wait, let us know. I can't tell if you're being facetious or not.
Oh, no, that was 100% serious. Let's talk about the BED index. That is our favorite index in crypto, composed 30% Bitcoin, 30% ETH, 30% DPI itself. What are we looking at on the week?
Yeah, down 4% on the week. Started the week at 136, hit the high of 143, hit also a low of 115, ended the week at roughly $134.
There you go. You know, David, I think it's time we check in on our friend EIP1559. I mean, it's been close to 2 months now.
Great guy,
doing great things, just like busy burning. You know, every day ETH is burnt is a day that I am bullish, sir. But let's look below the surface. That's the title of this article itself. And what does EIP1559 look like below the surface? Has it accomplished its goals?
Yeah, so the author, who is named T, does a fantastic write-up just kind of trying to parse apart the data of EIP1559. And the cool thing about EIP1559 is that like the data that comes out for it is like not known how significant that data is, what it really means. EIP1559 is emergent, as in the properties and behaviors and data that arrive out of EIP1559. There is no canonical like definition of what these things mean. And so this was actually one of the best.
There's no history. It's never been done.
There's no history. Like, not only has it never been done in crypto, but like blockchains and EIP, like everything is new. Everything is new. And so there's a lot of data here, and T gives his interpretation and analysis, but he definitely qualifies it saying like, hey, this is just my take. And like, we're going to need to have more data to see what these things mean. There's a ton of fantastic graphs and some analysis with each one. So if you want to just learn more about how EIP1559 is impacting Ethereum and Ether, definitely check this out. It's a great homework assignment for people who are trying to dive deeper to the code of Ethereum and the ETH markets. They're just some great analyses.
What is his take here, David? Like, what's the summary of it? Is EIP1559 working as designed or no?
Yeah, it's absolutely working as designed. What he was trying to indicate is like, well, okay, it's working as designed, but like, how does that actually change things, right? Like, we know EIP1559, it makes it easier to transact, it burns ETH, but what does that actually do?
So what does it do to daily miner cell pressure, for example, is one exactly graph in here.
Right, and like, how does it actually impact the ETH price at all? Right. And his take, if I remember correctly, is like in the short term, it actually doesn't impact the ETH price at all, because the ether that's being burnt is like literally the most elastic portion of the ETH supply. It's the most flexible, that actually doesn't impact the price. But what it does do in the future is that it'll prevent price drops in the future. Right. So really it's like, and this
helping
is actually
set a floor, a
it's,
higher
it's
floor.
Helping set a floor. Right. And so in the future, especially in the long-term future, this is like, and this is actually what I said in my original EIP1559 article, is that it's paying like EIP1559 when it burns ETH, it's like Ethereum putting security in a rainy day fund. Right. Like when there does come a time of high stress environments, that reduction in cell pressure, because we've been burning it for the past 1, 2, 5, 10 years, there's just simply less ETH available to sell. And so one of his takeaways, which again is up for interpretation, is that during future like volatility events, the downside should be dampened as a function of how much total ETH was burned.
Yeah, that's why I say full circle. It goes back, every day that ETH is burned is a day that I am bullish. And that's long-term bullish. I can't tell you what's going to happen in the short run, but long-term, this is a secular trend. I mean, we passed $1 billion worth of ETH burned, right? Over 300,000 ETH.
Today, we actually passed 400,000.
400,000 today, right? Mm-hmm. And so like, this pressure is just going to keep compounding on Ethereum. Then you get the merge. Everything Bankless listeners know, so we don't have to belabor that point. But bullish. I'm glad someone has done some deep diving on EIP 1559. David, let's also talk about DYDX. That was a story with some numbers in the market section. We love to talk about numbers. This is Antonio. Antonio is the founder of DYDX. He's going to actually be coming on the podcast on State of the Nation on Tuesday, right? So he says, 5 years I left Coinbase. I remember when he tweeted that he left Coinbase. He eventually founded DYDX. Today, DYDX is doing more trade volume than Coinbase.
God, like,
wow. Hell yeah.
What is the moment of reflection? 5 years it takes. That's what it takes, 5 years for a DeFi protocol to get built and then do more volume than the company that originally hired the guy. Like, wow, that's crazy. Congratulations, Antonio.
Yeah, it's huge, Antonio. So like, looking forward to talking to you soon. And this is the market share. This is a graph of the market share of DYDX. They're up to 27% market share of decentralized
DEX volume
exchanges. Yeah,
right. Yeah, DEX volume. Right. Mm-hmm.
And this includes some of the, you know, sillier DEXs like PancakeSwap and that sort of thing too. So actually, even higher than that, probably, in terms of real DEX volume.
Totally. And like the other cool thing is, like, this is the second decentralized exchange app to pass Coinbase in volume, Uniswap being the first. I'm pretty sure Coinbase actually, I mean, over time has done more volume and like sustains itself as the leader over time. Yeah. But like, breaking it over a 24-hour period or even a 7-day period, which Uniswap has done, is just the first step.
Yeah, well, DYDX is doing a lot of things right, right? So like Perpetuals is a fantastic product. Everybody loves that. They were one of the first to roll out on layer two. Yep. So under the hood, this is all ZK rollup technology, right? And also I think what's given them steroids, some extra juice, is kind of their token rollout, and the token launch, which they're using for liquidity mining. But you have an alternate theory as well as to why it's gained so much traction recently. Tell us about that, David.
I think these theories are definitely paired. Like, everyone likes tokens, and when tokens exist, they attract a lot of attention towards the app. But also at the same time, we have China banning crypto, and apparently it's real this time. And the reason why we know it's real is because we can see Chinese actors actually making decisions to
exchanges down,
like outflows. You can actually see this in the blockchain, right? Which is like the ultimate source of truth. And that is the clear differentiator between this China ban and the infinity other China bans that we've seen. And so there's speculation that all of this demand out of all these Chinese exchanges to trade and speculate and do exchange things has gone from these Chinese exchanges to DYDX, to a trustless DeFi exchange, which operates on a similar performance level because of the layer two as the exchanges that they are fleeing from. And so I think the big takeaway here is that when a nation state like China comes and bans crypto, where do they go? They don't go to another alternative, like more Western centralized exchange. They go to DeFi, right? Because they just got, quote unquote, censored. And so they're not going to go onto another censorable platform. They're going to go onto a DeFi platform. And so there's an article here out of Cointelegraph that says the DYDX token gains 80% in a week. What's driving the DEX token rally? And their subline is, traders raised their bids for the decentralized exchange token, believing as it would benefit from China's decision to classify all crypto transactions as illegal. And so there's speculation that people are moving on to DYDX in order to escape China, which just makes sense. Like, go on to the censorship resistant platform after you get censored by your nation state. That's what they're for.
Well, yeah, there's sort of a crypto narrative for you. It's like China ban equals bullish for DeFi.
Bullish banning.
That could be what's happening. Love that, man. Mm. Love that. I think that could be what's happening. David, let's also explore another trend that's happening. And this is the trend to total locked value in the multi-chain, as people say. So this is interesting. This is a plot of market cap of Ethereum and a number of other chains. And obviously we've seen sort of a alternate layer two kind of resurgence with you know, I guess Binance earlier in the year, and then Solana and Avalanche more recently, starting to really increase in market cap. And this is interesting when you look at a market share perspective, but I think it's actually more interesting to look at from a total locked value perspective, right? Mm. So Ethereum dominance has dropped from 84% of total locked value to 77%. So it's down, you know, I guess 7%, right? And then Binance has gone down a little bit. Solana has gone up from about 1% to 5%. Terra has gone up a little bit. Avalanche has gone from basically nothing to 2%. Phantom as well. I want to get your take on, like, what do you make of this? Is total locked value, is it moving into these other ecosystems? And is that to the detriment of Ethereum? What does that mean for the space? Is that bullish alternative layer ones? What do you think?
Yeah, so the take here, and we've been saying this for forever now, is like during bull markets, Ethereum's capacity gets consumed, and there's overflowing demand that Ethereum cannot satisfy because it has not done like layer one sharding, and the L2 ecosystem is about as nascent as the alternative L1 ecosystem. So when there's overflow for Ethereum main chain demand, when gas fees like, you know, exceed $100 a transfer, people need to go elsewhere. So some go to layer twos, some go to other L1s. And so what we're seeing here is that like the crypto industry has done a fantastic job bringing new people in. And a lot of new people don't want to or simply can't transact on the Ethereum L1, so they go elsewhere. The interesting story here to me is the lack of consensus as to where else to go, right? So Binance Smart Chain was like the first app, the first like other alternative L1 to like absorb some of Ethereum's overflow. But we've seen that actually go down this week while Solana, Terra, Avalanche, and Phantom have all gone up. There doesn't seem to be a clear consensus as to like, oh, Ethereum is full. Here's where we go next. Everyone's just going everywhere, right? And Antiprosynthesis, one of like, he's probably the only person that will actually accept the ETH maxi label willingly, has tweeted out this one tweet, which I really, really like, is like, you know, if you ask like what alternative L1 is going to kill Ethereum, you'll get 10,000 different answers. It's because like there actually isn't like a viable like the next second place to Ethereum, right? There's just like five third places, and that's why you don't see any of the overflow to Ethereum going into one specific blockchain. They're all kind of getting spread out.
I remember when Raoul Paul came on the podcast, and he mentioned briefly about like Ethereum dominance going down from its highs, right, in terms of total locked value. And he's like, yeah, it'll probably like decrease from 85% to like 75%, maybe 70%, but that's still a lot,
right?
And that
especially when everything is 10xing, right?
Yeah, it's basically sort of a, you know, a prediction of power law winners in this space, which you know, I tend to kind of agree with. But I have another take on this too, which is like, I think actually, David, total locked value can be a flawed metric in some ways. And made this point in an article that I wrote in 2020 on Bankless, talking about trustless economic bandwidth versus like economic bandwidth that is more trusted. And what I meant by that is like, it is more valuable from a bankless and decentralized decentralization perspective, right? To have capital on chain, which I call economic bandwidth, so value on chain that doesn't have any outside trust dependencies, right? So,
which is the whole point of this
whole
thing.
The whole point, right? So, like, if you're looking at USDC versus DAI, right? DAI is better, it's more trustless because it has less trust guarantees and it has less USDC inside of it. It's backed by other things like ETH, for example. And if you look at another asset on chain like Rai, which is fully backed by ETH, that is, you know, less
better,
trusted,
right?
Still.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And if you look at ETH in and of itself, right, that is the most trustless asset on Ethereum, right? And so what we miss when we look at just pure total locked value, total value locked, is we missed whether this is like actual trustless value or whether it's just some kind of a, you know, a stable coin. We also miss the settlement guarantees of the chain, right? So like, if we wanted to look at this and put another, I guess, column here, we could look at the Coinbase side chain, right? What's Coinbase? It's a ledger. It's a side chain. Right. It has one validator, and that is like the Coinbase
database
organization,
yeah. AWS servers.
Itself.
Yeah.
But it has like shareholders, right? It has DAO participants. Anyone who owns coin shares, I guess, has governance vote over it, right? So why not include them from a total locked value perspective? Well, right. We don't, because we don't call that DeFi.
Right.
But there is this scale, right? Ethereum is the most decentralized DeFi platform. Coinbase is not decentralized at all. And some of these chains are like somewhat right. in the middle. And I think a lot of this starts to look a bit more like a Phantom, for example, or a Terra, for example, or even a Polygon and sidechain example, looks a bit more like fintech and a right. bit less like permissionless, trustless DeFi. That's why I think total locked value can be misleading. Are we talking about trusted total locked value? Are we talking about purely trustless right. total locked value? The trustless is the stuff that I care about and the stuff that is, I think, the most sustainable and fits the protocol sync thesis of being like the most permanent and foundational for this whole operation. Did I explain that? No, does that make sense?
100%, 100%. And if listeners want to dive more into this, I highly recommend reading the article from Nick Carter called It's the Settlement Assurances Stupid. Or if you want to consume something out of Bankless, there is a talk I gave at Ethereal called Settlement Assurances and the Protocol Sync Thesis. And it describes this spectrum of just like when you make a transaction on a blockchain, they're not all created equal, right? Not all transactions are equally as trustless or as equally have as strong settlement assurances, right? So like when you send a Litecoin transaction, Litecoin blocks happen every 2.5 minutes. Does that mean when that block finalizes on Litecoin that you have as the same amount of settlement assurances as when you make a transaction on Bitcoin? No, absolutely not. Those are different levels of settlement assurances, therefore different levels of trustlessness. And each one of these blockchains are on that same sort of spectrum. How strong are the assurances that you have when you make a transaction that transaction actually settles? And the answer to this question needs to go into the architecture of the actual blockchain itself, but also the asset that you are also transferring, right? And so if you send USDC,
totally. Both of those things.
It's both of those things. If I send Ryan USDC on Ethereum, well, actually, did it really settle or not is actually not really related to the architecture of Ethereum or any other blockchain that's on, because you're actually trusting Circle to actually be this final arbiter of final settlement, right? And so these are very nuanced subjects. And this is, this is a new concept for you, settlement assurances. I highly, highly encourage you to go read It's the Settlement Assurances Stupid by Nick Carter, and then also the Settlement Assurances and the Protocol Sync Thesis video, which is on the Ethereal YouTube. And then there's also some things, I will put them in the show notes as well.
Yeah, that's it. We'll just do you guys a favor and put some of this stuff in the show notes, but it does require... The last thing I'll say on this is, David, I don't think this is a zero-sum game either, right? Like... Mm-hmm. More value, more eyeballs, more entrance into whether it's a more like centralized sidechain or some alternative layer one. It's all good for the space. It's all good for Ethereum. I think it's all good for Bitcoin, right? People often think that like this is some sort of a tribal game where there's going to be big losers and big winners. But like, even like, look, man, Ethereum is good for Bitcoin. Like Bitcoin maximalists don't know it. But it is. It's been you think Bitcoin would be above 40K if not for Ethereum?
Right.
Hell no.
Absolutely
no chance. Right. And it works the other way too. Uh-huh. I mean, Ethereum wouldn't even been possible about Bitcoin. So none of this, guys, is a zero sum game either. This is all going to be good. And we think the most decentralized protocols eventually will sink to the bottom, win the most market share, and be the most dominant. And that's a good thing if that happens.
Well, it actually even goes even further than that, right? So like when you have a maximally decentralized protocol, you can build centralized stuff on top of that. You can compromise on decentralization later, right? And so another article and also a Bankless podcast, I think number 5, it's called The Two Faces of Ethereum, or the DeFi Risk Spectrum, or the DeFi Trust Spectrum. The cool thing about maximizing decentralization is it allows you to compromise on decentralization later, right? But you have to get decentralization first. And so if you want to build a centralized permission sidechain on Ethereum, like, you can do that, right? Like, you have that option available
to you. But you can't do the opposite.
You can't. You can't put the cart before the horse.
Yeah, you can't build Ethereum on the sidechain. Right. Absolutely, guys. Well, we got excited about that, Porsche. We got to keep moving on.
I wonder why our roll-ups last so long.
I have no idea. Hopefully, you guys enjoy them. We definitely enjoy doing them. So, all right. Well, this is what's a graphic that caught my eye. This is from Coinmetrics. Their newsletter is fantastic, by the way. It comes out weekly. But this is a chart of the Uniswap 3 trading pairs. And you can see the various assets that are trading with. You see Tether, you see USDC, you see DAI. But this big pink cloud that you're seeing, that's all ETH, right?
Trustless economic bandwidth.
Trustless economic bandwidth on Ethereum. And I think the position, what this graph is really showing us is on Ethereum, and I think in general across DeFi, ETH is positioning itself and becoming positioned by default to be the reserve asset of DeFi, right? This is back to that narrative. We talked about reserve asset of NFTs, talk about reserve asset of the metaverse even, which is kind of a newer thing. But back to the reserve asset of DeFi, it's bearing out on the graphics. That's what Uniswap is using as its primary trading pair. And that's a great thing for decentralization. Any other follow-ups on that, David?
No, I think this actually fits in right into the conversation we were just having. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, last thing for you on the market side of things. Pretty big milestone for Polygon. Again, this is their sidechain solution, the proof of stake type solution. But they just eclipsed Ethereum layer one in daily active addresses for the very first time.
Okay, so this is a great illustration of why it's actually valuable to compromise on decentralization, because you can scale better that way. Centralization actually scales really, really far because you've actually compromised on decentralization. But because Matic, because Polygon is built on Ethereum, they get to give all of their users the ability to exit into the more trustless, into the more decentralized version of the universe, right? So you can get more scale by reducing decentralization, but once you hook into Ethereum, you also get the benefits of Ethereum.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, this is not a new idea either. We just call them sidechains and this sort of thing now, but like, where did you guys start your crypto journey? I bet it was on an exchange, a centralized exchange, right? Which is a sidechain, which then you then exited to continue the DeFi world. Same thing is happening here. But anyway, I think a lot of users will start their journeys on, obviously, exchanges, on sidechains, and on layer twos. And that's where we're going to see the user growth. We'll probably see the capital growth on mainnet, but the user growth will happen on these layer twos and sidechains.
100%.
All right, David, last thing. Total locked value in Tracer just exceeded $20 million. So it's super cool. And I know you did a Meet the Nation with them. When's that coming out?
That's coming out Monday at 12 p.m. Eastern time. 12 p.m. Eastern time. It walks us through the history of TracerDAO. They have one of the most interesting genesis stories I've ever heard, as well as where the team actually got the expertise, where they got the idea, what their roadmap is, and where they are going. So if you want to learn more about one of the most promising young DAOs that I've ever seen, check out TracerDAO.
Yeah.
On the Meet the Nation, on the Bankless YouTube.
Building on Arbitrum, Perpetuals Protocol. You've heard us talk about it in previous rollups as well. All right, guys, we are going to be back with the releases for the week. But before we do, we want to thank the sponsors that made this episode possible.
Bankless is proud to be supported by Uniswap. Uniswap is a new paradigm in asset exchange infrastructure. Instead of a cumbersome order book system where trades are matched with other humans, Uniswap is an autonomous piece of software on Ethereum, which is what Ryan and I call a money robot. No human counterparties or centralized intermediaries, just autonomous code on Ethereum. Input the token you want to sell and receive the token you want to buy. Something brand new in the Uniswap ecosystem is the Uniswap Grants program is now accepting applications for grants. We have been saying this for a while and we'll say it again. DAOs have money and they are in need of labor. If you think that you have something to contribute to the Uniswap DAO, apply for a grant to Uniswap. Just look at the size of the Uniswap treasury. It's almost $3 billion. This mountain of capital is looking for labor. Do you have something of value to contribute to the Uniswap DAO? No matter how big or small your idea is, you can apply for a uni grant at unigrants.org and help steer Uniswap in the direction that you think it should go. That's exactly what we did to get Uniswap to be a sponsor for Bankless, and you can do the same for your project. Thank you, Uniswap, for sponsoring Bankless. The era of proof of stake is upon us. Proof of stake systems like Ethereum, Terra, and Solana allow the industry to move away from the hot, loud, and wasteful proof of work systems and return back to a cottage industry of individual stakers and individual validators. And that is what we need to make this industry stay decentralized. Individuals must play their part in crypto network validation. And that is what Lido is here to do. Lido makes staking accessible to everyone at the click of a button. By delegating your stake to Lido's network of nodes, you can access the yield offered by proof-of-stake systems and claim your share of the network transaction rewards. Do you have 32 ETH and want to stake it to Ethereum, but running a node sounds intimidating? Or maybe you have less than 32 ETH and you need to pool your ETH with others so you can access staking yields. Lido offers a solution for both. Simply go to Lido.fi, choose which assets you want to stake, and deposit them to the Lido validating network. Lido is working to make sure proof of stake stays as decentralized as possible, and is committed to decentralizing its own validating network to eventually become a completely permissionless protocol. So if you want to stake your ETH, Terra, or Sol and get liquidity on your stake, go to Lido.fi to get started.
All right, guys, we are back with the hot releases of the week. The first is this, David. Kinext is launching an NXTP protocol, they say, to improve liquidity. Kinext, of course, is dealing with the kind of the Ethereum multi-chain space. So the ability to transition and move seamlessly assets from, say, an Arbitrum to an Optimism back to mainnet without waiting for anything. It's kind of an interoperability protocol. What are they doing here?
Yeah, if you guys remember Ryan and I talking about hop protocol, it's very, very similar. Just hopping assets between layer twos. Kinext has actually been in the Ethereum space for as long as I can remember, working on payment channels, which we all know is a very like foundational, fundamental piece of technology, but it's kind of been a solution looking for a problem. Because we used to think, oh, we'll scale Ethereum with payment channels. And then we forgot that, like, well, you don't have generalizability on payment channels. That's really, really hard. And so, like, we have this, like, awesome piece of technology led by Arjun Bhuptani and a bunch of other people working on payment channels. But now with this layer two ecosystem absolutely exploding, we actually now have the problem that we have the technology to solve for. And so Kinext has been, like, reappropriating their already existing payment channel tech to span payment channels between all the different layer twos. I think 2 weeks ago, we shouted them out because they recently passed $500 million in volume over their NXTP protocol. But that was before they announced the mainnet, which is what they are announcing right here. So they have the NXTP protocol mainnet, which is going to help you live a life on layer two by bridging all the layer twos so you never actually have to touch the Ethereum L1. They had a blog post forever ago announcing what they were building, and they had a fantastic meme called "The L1 is lava," as in, like, you never actually have to touch the
don't
L1.
Don't touch it.
Don't touch it, yeah. And so this is what it means to be a citizen, I think, in the whole global nexus of Ethereum, which is if you want to, do you have to actually go to the L1.
These bridges are super important, really essential infrastructure for the next wave here. Speaking of infrastructure, Andre, the founder of Wyrn and YFI, of course, a famous DeFi builder in the space, he is launching an NFT marketplace, or has launched an NFT marketplace. But the title of this article, this is a Coinbase article, says, Andre's new NFT marketplace is a vampire attack suicide pact. Wow. Well, like, what is that? That sounds like some hyperbole. He's going up against OpenSea, I guess. That's the vampire part of this.
Right.
What's your take here, and what does this mean?
Well, I think after OpenSea had that drama with the insider trading employee who they have since let go, everyone has been asking, it's like, hey, wait a second. OpenSea, it's not a dApp. It's not an application. It's a company. And so now there's been some attention on decentralized marketplaces, peer-to-peer marketplaces for NFTs. And so Andre, in his tweet that we're watching here, he's demoing what very much looks like an OpenSea-type format, but apparently it's a P2P version of that. It's also built on Phantom, apparently, which Andre Cronier is a big fan of. But he's also built other things on Phantom before that. He ultimately just ports to Ethereum because that's where all the users are. And the title of this piece, The Vampire Attack, is alluding to, like, well, OpenSea doesn't have a token, and we all know what happens when, like, something that doesn't have a token gets forked, and then a token is added before that original token exists, right? We saw this with the SushiSwap drama. That's how SushiSwap came into existence in the first place. It vampire attacked Uniswap before Uniswap had a token. And so the idea is that this new NFT marketplace is, in theory, going to get a lot of adoption if it can find a way to vampire attack OpenSea. OpenSea's code is not open source and verifiable, so I think that makes it a little bit more difficult to actually do that. I'm not a coder, so I don't know, but I'm pretty sure that's true. But either way, the incentive to vampire attack OpenSea before it has a token is really, really strong. We were actually recording with Devin Finzer tomorrow, Friday. Today's Thursday. And so I'm actually going to be asking this question. It's like, yeah, like, wait a second, Devin. Like, how are you guys going to, like, have emotes if you don't have a token? Question mark.
Yeah, the other important piece here, of course, is, like, they're going to be expanding to each chain, but this is all open source as well. Mm-hmm. So Andre is going to release this as an open source project. But in general, I love competition like this, David, because I think it leads to better user experience, better products, cheaper products for the end customer. So vampire attacks, bring them on. It's great. It just ups our game. Let's talk about this, David. Coinbase just released a direct deposit feature. So this allows users to get paychecks in crypto. Isn't that what you've always wanted? If you're, like, working in a corporation, right? Getting a paycheck in crypto, in USDC, or maybe some slice of that in Bitcoin or ETH, maybe the BED index someday, rather than getting it into your Wells Fargo account. How much more convenient is that? Looks like Coinbase is making a play there, and it's fulfilling sort of some speculation that we've had in the very early days of Bankless, that all of these exchanges would slowly transform into banks. We call them crypto banks in the early days, and this is the next check mark, right? Oh, direct deposit, just like a bank. Yep, we're doing it. What's your take?
First off, much better banks. Let's divide a line between Coinbase.
Upgraded banks.
Upgraded banks, like crypto-powered, crypto-enabled banks. We're going to talk about this later, but, like, the more and more that Coinbase becomes a bank, the more and more it threatens all the other banking institutions out there, which, according to, I think, some of the incumbents, will be argued it presents a systemic risk, right? Like, if Coinbase is literally so successful that it sucks up all the deposits of the other banks are literally in trouble, and they are very, very integrated into the rest of the financial system. So this is probably causing a bunch of concern from all the boomer banks out there that aren't crypto powered, while they watch Coinbase just, like, run circles around them when it comes to innovation and just consumer benefits.
Look, it's not just us saying this. This is exactly what Kathy Wood told us when we had her from ARK Invest on the podcast a few weeks ago. She's like, hey, you're seeing this ugly regulation because the banks are scared. Mm-hmm. Like, they're pushing on the regulators to go do something in DeFi and crypto. And maybe that's what we're seeing. Endgame type stuff, I think.
If I never have to touch Wells Fargo again, I can get all my basic financial services out of Coinbase, which are so basic, by the way. I just need direct deposit, which they just enabled, and then just the ability to, like, transfer money and pay my credit cards. Like, there is not very many steps left before I just have to fundamentally question why I keep my Wells Fargo account.
Oh, David, we've got some more shade on Wells Fargo coming to this podcast. Just wait to the news section, my friend.
Oh,
Wells Fargo, get ready. All right. USDC as well has been enabled in AngelList. So AngelList is a very popular kind of angel investing platform. And now they are enabling not just fiat, but USDC. So this is another step for USDC to gain some traction in kind of the emerging fintech space, which is also awesome. Speaking of fintech and DeFi mullet type stories, we got fintech in the front and DeFi in the back. Affirm. Have you ever used Affirm? They're like a fintech type product, but they, like, split payments, or no, they delay payment, right?
Yeah. So they turn one expensive purchase into, like, a monthly thing that you can pay for over time.
Okay. I hate those things personally, but I understand that, it's an interesting product, and clearly they have some adoption. What's interesting about this story is they're kind of pivoting to DeFi, not entirely pivoting, but they're rolling out debit cards that allow customers to buy and sell crypto directly from savings accounts as a product. So, you know, I think it's interesting here is they've got some traction, product market fit with their single killer app feature, right? And now where are they looking for the green space opportunity? Well, it's all crypto. And they appeal to millennials, Gen Z, sort of that demographic. Guess who likes crypto? Same demographic. This is the DeFi mullet thesis playing out where fintech companies start building on top of decentralized protocols. And I'm here for it, man. I love this stuff. We're going to see more and more of this stuff throughout the year and throughout the, like, the years to come.
It's kind of interesting that the crypto thing about their new product has nothing to do with the core business. But that's also kind of cool, right? It's like, it doesn't even matter. It's just they think it's valuable enough that they're doing it anyways. And the more and more we can get companies to do this, the more and more crypto gets integrated into our actual economy, our fintech economy, our existing economy, the harder and harder it is for regulators to gut that stuff out after it already gets integrated.
It's a heat shield for the regulatory heat, for sure, when we have more adoption like this. Dave, this is interesting too. So I guess the index co-op folks are creating a Polygon indice, right? It's called PDI. This sounds like it's an investment. It's an asset that you hold that invests in a whole bunch of Polygon assets, like Polygon apps and this sort of thing.
Yeah, I think it's like the Polygon app layer token. So if you want to not only bet on Polygon by buying Matic, you can also bet on the Polygon app layer by buying the Polygon diversified index from Index Co-op.
That's really cool. I was curious where Index would grow, and looks like they're pressing into all of these interesting spaces. David, last thing for the week, Nami is a layer two scaling effort as well. I don't know too much about Nami, but they have just announced $8 million in funding led by Dharma Partners, and they are supposedly bringing some ETH scalability to layer two. It's kind of a optimistic roll-up type approach, plus some state channels, but I don't know much about this project. Any takes here?
Yeah, I also don't know much about it. It seems to be coming out of left field for me. A couple of people I've talked to have had some grumblings about being, they're just a little bit unsure as to what the product actually is. I think it's going to be a wait and see for me.
Yeah, absolutely. But that is out now. Let's talk about raises, David. The big raise of the week, I think, is this social token raise with the Roll protocol. So we've been talking about social token infrastructure. It's starting to attract more and more capital. They just raised, Roll raised $10 million. And Roll's kind of like this social money experiment, would you say? It allows people with followings, communities, to issue their own token in easy ways. You don't have to deal with smart contracts and, you know, fork code. They just make the whole thing easy. Any takes here?
My take is that actually I think social tokens and DAO tokens are actually kind of closer than what people think. These things aren't very well defined, and I think we're only going to define them as they get more and more used and more built out. And so stay tuned.
This goes back to like thousands and thousands and tens of thousands and millions eventually of tokens are coming, right? I don't know that regulators are prepared for that world either, but they're coming, like it or not.
No, the regulators are waiting for them to show up at their door to ask permission.
Yeah. Last thing for you guys before we get into the news is jobs. This is your weekly reminder. Get a job.
Get a job.
For a DAO. Go work for crypto. Go do your part. We've got a community manager role from Aragorn. I'm Lord of the Rings, man. This is like Aragorn. And also a founding blockchain engineer at Highlight, a senior software programmer from Popcorn, community lead from Popcorn as well, senior front-end web developer for Tracer DAO. In addition, I don't know, there's dozens more of jobs on this board. So if you are looking for a job in crypto, best way to get it is on the Bankless job board. Go check that out. We'll include a link in the show notes.
And I bet you a decent number of those jobs come with tokens, and everyone likes tokens.
Never know. Man. Never know. Man. All right, guys. News time. David, what are our news headlines for the week? What are we going to talk about?
Yeah, coming up first, we're going to lead with the fun stuff is NFTs on Twitter. Yay! So if you have an NFT that you think is especially cute, or your CryptoPunk that you think is especially cool, you can now prove to the rest of Twitter that that is literally something that you do actually own instead of just right-click saving it. And so that's pretty cool. Ethereum has found its way into the depths of Twitter and is doing it with NFTs. I've been saying this a bunch of times on the Bankless program, and I'll say it again. NFTs are how Ethereum markets itself to the rest of the world. It's literally Ethereum's marketing surface area. It's the social flexing aspect of things, and it's also the verifiable aspect of things. And so, Ryan, you got a tweet here that you tweeted out saying, Twitter should roll out a blue checkmark for NFT profile pics to just validate them against Ethereum. Every social network will be doing this. It's the most obvious feature ad ever. And that came in August 29, which was a month ago. And then just recently, we have a developer at Twitter teasing what an NFT verified profile might actually look like. And so that involves actually syncing up your address with some of the various options that we all know and love, like MetaMask, Coinbase Wallet, Trust Wallet, Argent. And if you have an NFT in those addresses that you link, you can sign a transaction to verify you own a NFT. That's pretty cool.
This is awesome, man. This is exactly what crypto wanted. This is exactly it. All we wanted was for Twitter to authenticate and verify our NFTs as profile pictures on the platform, right? And here they are. They're doing it.
Look at that little ETH logo right next to the profile picture.
Yeah.
So you think Jack's going to allow that to make it into the production version?
Yeah, so it's not an Ethiopia flag, right? It's the ETH logo this time. And
Checkmate, Jack.
It's kind of cool that they'll differentiate on what chain you own this thing, right? Because like somebody could create a CryptoPunk clone on some other chain and it wouldn't be the same thing, right? So yeah, this is exactly what crypto needs. I think this will add massive legitimacy for NFTs. I think this is going to add value to NFTs. I also think every single social media platform is going to follow in their footsteps, right? Like Twitter is the lead here. Then next is going to be Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, everybody's going to follow this trend. No one cannot now that Twitter's rolling this out. They're probably already working on it, David, right? Like when I tweeted this out in August, I was just thinking about it. It was just like a shower thought, like, wouldn't that be cool? They were working on it at the time, obviously. It's a very obvious feature for these social network platforms.
I don't know, Ryan. I think they took your tweet and they ran with it. I think it was your idea.
Yeah. I've been tweeting Jack to do lots of things on Ethereum, and this is the only
he listens to every single one. He just, I swear to God.
He just picks and chooses.
And at the same time, I'm going to front run this. We were going to talk about this later, but I'm going to talk about it right now. You can now also tip on Twitter with Bitcoin. This is the Bitcoin thing that they integrated as well. And so I'm looking forward to seeing the data as to what comes out. What do you think is going to be used more?
I know what I think, dude. Yeah. I think people don't want to spend their Bitcoin. They want to flash their NFTs. They don't want to spend their Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. One's going to have product market fit. The other's barely going to do anything. Yeah. Unfortunately, it's great, but
payments on Bitcoin. We've tried this before.
We've been trying it since the inception of crypto, right? Like
people Bitcoin don't care about payments.
Anyway, all right, let's talk China, David. So okay, China, sad face, ban. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sad face. Okay, this is, I guess, stuff getting real in China. We've had bans before. This time, maybe it's different. We had Sahil on the podcast. If you guys missed that earlier this week, go check out our State of the Nation with Sahil, where we cover this in depth. But what's the high-level take here? What are they banning? What does this mean for us?
Yeah, so what are they banning is a little bit kind of up in the air. I think it's more related to actual businesses. So if you are helping facilitate crypto transactions, then that's bad. But there's a little bit of speculation that simply holding crypto and owning crypto is still okay. It's going to be one of those things where we're just going to have to find out after the fact. Chinese regulators, they kind of get to do whatever they want, right? And so they will interpret their own laws in ways that will benefit them by their choosing. But as far as being a business in China, you are shutting down, basically, is what's going on. And not only are businesses inside of China, but businesses that are serving Chinese customers are also restricting access to their platforms to Chinese customers. So we've seen mining pools not allow Chinese miners. We see exchanges that are based in China with a lot of Chinese customers have extreme outflows. And this is why we know that this ban is real, because we are actually seeing on-chain verifiable data and decisions being made by companies that are in China or in relating to Chinese customers actually change their policies. So it's kind of like the easiest tell ever to figure out, oh yeah, this one's actually real.
Yeah, Huobi, which is a large exchange based in China, they are getting rid of, if you're a Chinese citizen and you're on Huobi, you have to exit, you have to leave, right? They're blocking them all from their platform. That's going to phase out. Also, you mentioned outflows, David. There was a Coinbase chart that just showed like ETH and Bitcoin outflows from Huobi on like over the last few months, but then on the news of this, and it was just like this single red spike down, right?
Exit, like, exit all Chinese exchanges.
Largest decrease ever. Now, you know, to some of your thoughts earlier, as we're talking about, maybe some of this is going to end up in DeFi. Like this capital has got to go somewhere. Right. And China's just squeezing the balloon. They're squeezing it outside of their borders, outside of their regulated exchanges. Seems like a short-sighted move, but it's going somewhere else. Maybe it's going to DeFi. Maybe it's going to US exchanges, maybe it's going to the Binances of the world, but they don't want it in their jurisdiction. This is also something that I noticed this week, David, is they blocked CoinGecko, CoinMarketCap, and TradingView. It's all blocked in China now. So great firewall, of course, you can VPN around that, I guess.
Right.
But this is now more censorship of DeFi, maybe a direct attack on DeFi and crypto to make these websites blocked in China. It's the first time they've been blocked ever.
Hey, as we all know, you actually can't ban crypto. You can only ban your own citizens from touching crypto. And so crypto, it's still actually in China. It's just now illegal for you as a Chinese citizen to actually touch it. And that's an important distinction, an important takeaway. I mean, how much can China... They've already banned video games, apparently. So like, how much is China actually going to ban before their citizens are just fed up with it? I mean, it's China, so the answer is like a lot. But there's a tipping point somewhere.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think they're just going to, you know, this, many citizens are just going to not listen, right? They'll just find other avenues and ways of doing this and move capital the way they want to. All right. Those are the three. Well, actually the third item that we wanted to talk about, I think we should save to the end of this, David, because that's kind of a deep, sober topic. Yep. Virgil Griffith, an Ethereum developer, was, pled guilty, just, pled
on
guilty
Monday,
on Monday to some charges. We'll get into that in the detail, but first let's talk about some happier subjects
and then
get back
to
Virgil Griffith.
Happy first,
we're not ready
later
for that. Okay, so let's talk about this on Ethereum news, this $23 million fee. So Bitfinex paid a $23 million fee accidentally, I believe, in just a kind of a routine type of transaction. What happened here?
Yeah, so what happened here was they swapped out the send value with the gas fee value. And so how much they wanted to send, they actually accidentally put into how much gas they were willing to pay. Oopsies.
Have you ever done that?
I have not done that, no.
I've never done that either.
And I mean, things get really complicated when you're in an organization as large as Bitfinex and you're sending that much money. It's like, they're not using MetaMask, right? They're using their own proprietary software.
Yeah.
And when you do that, and they were sending it onto Diversify, the ZK proofs layer 2, and something just went wrong in the transaction. Fortunately, 99% of the time, transactions go to a centralized mining pool, and those mining pools are known individuals, and like they don't miss when they just like get a random $23 million transaction. So that transaction actually got sent back because, like, hey, you can just go knock on the centralized company's email address and, hey, we accidentally mailed you guys $23 million. Can you send that back to us, please? And like everyone knows who these people are, and so they sent it back. So the money ended up back in the right spot, but the lesson here is that layer two transfers have growing pains with them. We still have to nail down our protocols and harden our code. These are the early days of layer twos, and things go wrong every now and then.
Yeah, absolutely. I wonder what would happen if a validator in kind of ETH2 received this amount of money and it was like an anonymous validator.
Right. At that point, you would just pray that that person was altruistic.
Yeah, here's your $23 million back. Wow. What a reward, though, as a validator to suddenly have that pop up. All right, let's talk about this. Aave, we've talked about this before, but the institutionalization of DeFi that's starting to happen. Aave Arc is a platform on Aave. It's built on the same protocol, but it is open and primarily whitelisted and targeted towards large institutions. Now they are gearing up for launch. Anything to talk about here, David?
Nothing other than the previous Fireblocks podcast episode that we did that talks about all this infrastructure that something like an institutional version of Aave needs to support their institutional clients. This is a huge frontier that we are just now pulling the curtains back behind.
Yeah, I think they just want... but it's fine. It works. It works on Bankless. They just want some KYC, right? They have to have that. And this institutional capital is kind of sitting dormant with low APYs, you know, outside of DeFi, and they want access to some of these yields. So this is a way to get them that access. Also, David, there was a scare in Compound earlier this week, and I noticed that some people, you know, pinged me on Discord. It's like, what is this? Right. What's going on with Compound? I was concerned at first that the worst was happening, which was maybe there's some kind of zero-day bug in Compound itself, contracts are getting drained, right? Because so much of this industry is built on a compound yield. But what actually happened was less severe. What happened?
Yeah, so the actual bug was that the Comp token, which is issued at a regular rate to all the people supplying or borrowing from the Compound application, over time, you get a trickle of Comp to reward you for participating either on the supply or the demand side. What happened was that I believe there was an update to the comptroller, which controls the comp token, like a week ago, and apparently people were allowed to claim more comp than they were actually supposed to be issued. And so this was more or less like an inflation bug in the comp token. I don't think
just
it was
the comp token.
Just the comp token. Just the comp token. Yeah. Pools are fine. Deposits are fine. Like all funds are safe. Except for the comp token had a little bit more supply get sent out into the markets than was intended. I don't know how much more supply. Apparently, it was actually a decent amount. I think it was like $80 million. But other than that...
Yeah, a lot. Yeah, it was... exactly. I think it was $80 million. So I ran this calculation. It was 280,000 comp tokens that were released, which is the equivalent of about $80 million released into the wild. So... not awesome.
Not awesome.
Comp,
but also, I mean, if you tell me that like this is the bug that Compound has, I'm like, okay, thank God, Jesus.
Yep. It's okay. I was super relieved to hear about this, and they'll get that fixed and upgraded. So I guess no big deal this time around. We gotta wait for those.
I'm knocking on wood like a billion times.
You know what's cool here too, David? Next bit of news is if you ever played Axie Infinity before October 26, 2020, check your wallet. This is Axie Infinity tweeting this out from their account. They just airdropped $60 million, 800,000 AXS tokens to their earliest gamers. Just a thank you, like just a reward. Here, OGs, you believed in us when no one did. And so here's $60 million. Mm. How freaking awesome is that?
Yeah, that's pretty crazy.
That's really cool.
I've seen people report they got $9,000. I heard another person report they got $16,000. I'm not sure the metrics as to how they distributed it to their players, but like $60 million to early players when there wasn't nearly as many players as there are today, that's a nice chunk of change.
You know, David, we ran a post on Axie, a tactic, a how-to on Bankless, March 2020. That would have been well before this. If you did your Bankless homework, you got some money from AXS. That's all I'm saying.
Ryan, did you do your Bankless homework?
My homework is to publish the post, David. Okay.
You give out the homework, you don't actually do it.
I mean, Bankless is alpha. I'll just say that. Yeah. Hey, maybe I have some more homework to do.
Can't take our own lessons.
Can't take our own lessons. Moving on, let's talk about the amount that of ETH that is staked, because it's absolutely colossal amount at this point. Almost 8 million ETH staked. Mm. So at current prices, Lido reports this, that's $22 billion worth of ETH backing the economic security of the Beacon chain, which of course doesn't have state on it yet, right? But will. And it's really cool to see this amount of value is far more efficient than proof of work. If you guys listen to any of our Justin Drake episodes where we talk about like ultrasound money, you've heard that meme for ETH, the asset. Wonder where it comes from. Came from Justin Drake episodes on Bankless, where he actually describes the economic efficiency and the importance of having a massive amount of money backing a network like Ethereum. Any other takes here?
Yeah, with ETH and Ether, right? Two sides of the same coin. You have ultrasound money on the Ether side, and you have ultra secure Ethereum on the Ethereum side. Ooh. And it's, yeah, you like that one?
I like that. Yeah.
And as we get closer and closer to the merge date, the number of how the dollar value, the capital measure of how much is staked on the Beacon chain, on the future Ethereum chain, is just making it safer and safer and safer. When we do port over, that's just more and more security towards DeFi.
There was the myth at one point in time, David, I remember in the doldrums of 2018, 2019, mm-hmm. that the price of ETH doesn't matter. That was so wrong.
I have a button for
so
that.
So wrong.
I have a button for that.
Thank you. It deserves another one. Please push that again, please. That's how wrong it is. Now we know, right? Now we can see as we transition to proof of stake, it's becoming self-evident that the value of ETH is the economic security of the network. Super important. Look at this slope up. Yes. Thank you. Look, this is the ETH deposited over time, and it's just a nice curve up.
Mm. Yeah, it does not go down at all. Well, I mean, it can't go down, so there's that. But continues to stay. No, it can't, because it can't get withdrawn.
Well, I mean, we're still at 6.6% yield from staking. So still not a bad yield.
ETH denominated yield, 6.6%. Nice.
Eventually, this has got to drop to like something like the risk-free rate, right? Which has got to be like 3-4%, something like that. So this is all playing out as expected. David, let's get into NFTs really quick. Yep. Snoop is getting into NFTs. We talked about it last time, but now he's actually got something going on in the metaverse. I see a Snoop car here. I see what looks like a, you know, virtual party. Mm. Here you go.
Oh, wow. Look at this. Oh, my gosh. Okay, so what we're looking at here is the Sandbox game. And I think what's going on is that they've signed on Snoop Dogg as like their influencer, right, to get onboarding and traction. If you're, for people listening to the podcast, it looks very much like Minecraft, very blocky. And when you actually, I've actually gone and done a little bit of investigating as to what this thing actually is. It actually looks like a very well built out sort of like, if for those that remember Second Life, kind of like that. You get to build your own assets. You get to build your own avatars. Each of these assets are NFTs. You can buy it with this native sand token currency. So it's very much a virtual world universe that is NFT powered. And they've gotten Snoop Dogg on their like their influencer team. So this is pretty cool. We'll see if this actually gains any traction. The only reason why I noticed it was because of Snoop Dogg. It didn't really come from any of my like internal NFT Ethereum circles. But hey, like NFTs are exploding beyond of what I can comprehend or pay attention to. So who knows?
Yeah, that's what's cool. Do you see some Bored Apes in the screen clips here?
Oh, I missed it.
Like they're integrating other NFTs. Wait, here it is.
So I can run around there with my crypto. My CryptoPunk would actually, or CryptoPunks at large, would fit very well into this aesthetic because they're already very pixely.
Yeah, you can import them into this world, I'm sure. But by the way, do you know what Sandbox is built on? Is it some kind of
sidechain? All Ethereum. I don't know if it's on a layer two. I can't imagine it wouldn't be, but I do know it's on Ethereum.
If it's got Bored Apes, it also reads the Ethereum blockchain and like imports those NFTs in, which is super awesome, man. Entire world's being built around this. Yep. Let's talk about another NFT news. Dapper Labs, whom you know, the folks behind NBA Top Shots and also the original CryptoKitties, they're expanding into the NFL. So I think they're just doing the same play in the NFL as they did with the NBA. And they're signing Packers Aaron Jones as well. No, sorry, that's wrong. FTX is signing Aaron Jones. I guess all of crypto is trying to get some legitimacy and credibility with the NFL market. But let's talk about this Dapper Labs thing. Seems like an obvious play for Dapper after you hit the NBA to go after the NFL. Probably a big deal for them. What do you think?
I mean, we all know that there is this massive world of collectibles that runs alongside sports, right? Like you can go into any sports stadium, go into where do you go buy things inside of sports stadiums? Like to buy the
merch,
collectible. But there's this specific.
David and I are really good at sports.
Once upon a time. Yeah. Like the player shop. I don't know. You can go in and like you can buy signed baseball bats, signed baseballs. And now we can make more virtual representations of like whatever. I don't know however they want to do this, but like virtual collectibles. And again, like I don't think people are going to go and be like, why would I buy this like digital version of like, nope, they're just going to buy it. They're just going to buy it.
My favorite athlete did this, right? Like, I want this memorabilia. It's digital now. That's even better because now I can display it on my phone. It doesn't have to take up space in my house.
Exactly.
So onboarding the world again. Again, I think like, I think of Dapper more as sort of a side chain, right? And I think all of this will flow into the rest of the crypto economy. It's all pie expanding good stuff.
Team store. It's called a team store. That's what it's called.
Listeners need to know that. Listeners are probably like, what the hell, guys? Don't you do any sports? All right, Bitcoin stuff. Bitcoin's Lightning Network just reached all-time highs, which is super cool to see. Mm-hmm. I'm a huge supporter of Lightning, David. Mm-hmm. Like, it is a trustless way at lower cost of transaction to send Bitcoin. Mm. So I'm pleased to see some adoption here. Yep. And they're getting up to
3K. They broke 3K.
Yep. 3K Bitcoin, that is. So that's the equivalent of about 120 or so million dollars. Mm-hmm. So it's great to see Lightning catch on. Part of this might be El Salvador. Part of this might be maybe the Twitter traction on tipping. Maybe that's too early. I don't know. But it's like other things like that. I will say, if you go to DeFi Pulse right now, Lightning is number 41 on the DeFi. Like, it's not an apples to apples comparison, right? But
3K is more Bitcoin than I have, but like in the grand scheme of things, it's
not a lot.
Not a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. But we'll be monitoring this and see how it goes. And I think this is a good sign. This is a bankless money system as well. It's just always the question, David, do people really want to spend their Bitcoin? I don't know. And, have you ever used Lightning? It's pretty clunky.
No. And most people haven't. And most people think that they have, except they've actually just used a custodial service that runs a Lightning node for them.
Exactly right. And I think there's a reason the Ethereum community abandoned state channels.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And it's easy to like hop across protocols. But like payment channels, state channels never really took off on Ethereum. And
until this whole L2 thing. But also like state channels built on an EVM is fundamentally different than state channels built on a UTXO model.
Yep, absolutely. But anyway, good news there. David, we should talk about the Visa regulation, or sorry, not Visa regulation, but Visa's actually just released a white paper. They are developing an interoperability concept so that central bank digital currencies can talk to cryptocurrencies I guess exchange trade with one another. So this is like
and other central bank digital currencies too, right? It's like a generalized
interoperability
hub.
Network,
yep.
Right?
Yep.
Okay, so I didn't read this entire white paper, but cool to see Visa expanding the space. Any other takeaways for us here?
Yeah, my takeaway is infrastructure for CBDCs is getting built out faster than the CBDCs actually are. Like, the United States has not except in China.
China's crushing it, right?
Crushing it, right? Like, they don't even need infrastructure. They just need the actual CBDC, which is getting rolled out. So Visa is like, hey, we have this interoperability like mechanism to bridge all the CBDCs and crypto. And then like the actual like Federal Reserve of the United States is like, CBDCs, do we really need that? I mean, the answer is yes, but like they don't even know it yet. But yeah, the private market is like ahead of the public markets by orders of magnitude. So I think Visa is just like taking a gamble that at some point in time, the US regulators will get their head out of their blanks and figure out that they do need a CBDC. And then Visa's like, hey, we've been waiting for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Visa is absolutely getting ahead. They've seen the light with crypto, even though the US government has not. Let's talk about some more US government stuff. This will tee us up for our next conversation, David. But 1inch, which is a DEX aggregator, did you know that they just blocked US traders for the first time? So it's a geo block. If you go to 1inch from the US, you will be kicked off the site. You will be geo blocked out of it. I know some folks use VPNs, but step. And I think they're doing this because they're planning to create a US only product. Mm. It's like bifurcate, but like this is back to the story of like, okay, so 1inch is an aggregator and user interfaces can be blocked. The underlying smart contracts that power 1inch and that power all of the assets and decentralized exchanges behind them, those are things that cannot be blocked, right? So you can still have access to those because it's DeFi, because it's on Ethereum. But aggregators have a role and can definitely block individuals from using their platform. And I hate going to these sites, David, and being present in the US. And just because I'm a US citizen, I can't freaking use it.
Right.
Like, what's up with that? Right? Missed a DYDX airdrop because of that. Tons of US citizens did, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's no other country, by the way. It's not even like North Korea and Iraq.
China.
China. But like, it's so strange to be blocked out of this emerging financial system as a US citizen, as a citizen of like a free country. And I don't understand. What's your take?
Yeah. So DEX aggregators, they are actually on the more centralized side of the spectrum. They're not completely on chain. I do believe there is some like Web2 infrastructure that is a component of aggregating all the DEXs.
For sure.
Yeah. The order routing is a smart contract on chain, but I think the API pings and like getting in the information, that is all done in a centralized fashion. So like in theory, like the DEX aggregators are have a centralized front end that can be blocked, and that will actually mess up the choke point, right? That will actually mess up the product, unlike Uniswap, unlike Balancer, unlike the actual true DEXs out there. And I think one of the reasons why we can definitely say that that's true is because they're making a US version of their front end, right? What they actually like put on the US version versus the international version, how they differentiate those things, who knows? Also,
at least they could say they tried, right? Yeah, I think that's what some of these companies are trying to do.
Totally.
Is we're trying to comply. Speaking of trying to comply, so the CFTC just imposed a penalty. This is the Commodities and Futures Exchange regulator in the US of $1.25 million against Kraken for offering illegal off-chain digital asset trading and failing to register as required. So I think this is maybe some of the futures.
The TLDR is they gave their customers margin accounts and they didn't margin register accounts with the CFTC. Which I mean, I guess that's actually like pretty straightforward. That's actually relatively normal. That's not like anybody targeting
crypto. I see relatively normal things coming out of the CFTC.
Right. Yeah.
David, like they seem, at least to date, they've been much more reasoned and rational about this. And what's interesting about this is $1.25 million, that's just like a slap on the wrist for somebody like Kraken.
Yep.
I mean, Kraken's probably like, yep, worth it. Wells Fargo, man, I told you we'd get back to Wells Fargo. Here they are. Wells Fargo has been overcharging customers for like 7 years in a row. This is a final settlement from a case that spanned from like 2010 to 2017 or 2018. And what they were doing, David, if you were a small business customer and you were trying to exchange, say, some like dollars for like euros or something, they would actually give you the wrong amount. Okay. So if it's like, if the exchange rate was like 1.025, they'd do like 1.052.
Right.
Just like switch around two digits and then pocket the rest. Okay. And the whole cult, like all of the, like many, the culture was to do this, to cheat their customers. Right. And this is what the settlement actually says. Wells Fargo created an atmosphere in which employees openly joked about and celebrated taking advantage of the bank's customers. Okay.
Nice.
Right?
You know what fixes this? DEX aggregators.
Tell me, right?
Yeah.
Like no person in the middle of this. Like you could see all of the transactions on chain, on exchange. That's what we're moving toward. That is the reason for bankless. So banks can't screw people over. And it's nice for the DOJ. The DOJ had to go prosecute this. Right in court, had to catch them. How many times are the banks not caught doing these things?
Right.
We'll never freaking know, right? But like the DOJ doesn't have to worry about this sort of thing if all of this is on chain and they could see the full transaction history.
Right. And the customer does too, which is important, which is why huge missing component that Wells Fargo doesn't have to deal with is like report their on-chain data of like how they actually got the number that they got, right? And Ryan, if you remember, I think in like 2013 or 2014, there was a big story as to how Wells Fargo did so well after the 08 crisis. And then in 2014, they were charged with like the culture at Wells Fargo promoted their like salespeople, their bankers, to open up as many accounts from their customers as possible. And so they were charged with like
their
bankers being really, really aggressive with their customers, saying like, hey, you need to open up this account and this account and this account, because they needed to make quota. Their bankers were salespeople. And so they got charged in 2014 for having a culture that promoted opening unnecessary accounts. And they were also doing it to their customers without even asking their customers' permission, because the pressure on these bankers to make sales quotas were so incredibly strong that it became a toxic, abusive relationship between the bankers and their employees, right? And so this is what happens when you have a financial system that is no longer innovating and growing and developing, but has just switched to an extraction-based model, because there's nothing left in the web legacy financial world. So you have to extract as maximally as possible. And there's no innovation. There's only extraction left in that world.
Absolutely. Rent collection, gouging. These are words that come to mind as you're talking about. You know what we need to do, David, is break up with our banks.
Yeah, I've heard this one
That's
before.
What we need to do. Open finance, guys. This is the solution. This is why we're on the journey. Senator Lummis might be on the journey as well. At least she seems to be in our court. We've been looking for advocates coming out of the Senate. She might be one. In fact, we're hoping to get her on the Bankless podcast at some point in time. But she laid out in front of the Senate some principles for U.S. digital currency, talked about the role of stablecoins, talked about America's leadership in global financial services is something that the country should be proud of, and they should extend that into cryptocurrency, lean into it, rather than trying to stop it and trying to create barriers and blockers every time someone wants to do something with cryptocurrency. That is a welcome message, David. Any other takeaways from her notes here?
Nope. And I think we should keep on going.
Absolutely.
Other than good job and thank you.
Yep. Well, let's get to this. While we're talking about the US, Virgil Griffith, David, do you want to start with this story? Because people might not be familiar with this story and the context. Give us that.
Yeah, Virgil Griffith, he is an Ethereum developer that was actually before my time. I never had the honor of meeting this guy. For those that know the hamster dance or the skunk dance or the raccoon dance that like a lot of these core Ethereum people did, I can't remember, at DevCon or something. There's a funny little dance out there. There are Vitalik's out there, Carl Floor, so all doing this funny little dance. And Virgil Griffiths was there too, right? And that's kind of where I see him in the space. But like, he's a very core part of some of the early days of Ethereum. Just overall proponent of how blockchains and crypto economic systems that span global communities can create global peace. And he actually made the decision to go to North Korea to give a talk at a North Korean blockchain conference out there. Turns out North Korea has crypto conferences too. And then when he came back, he was arrested for violating sanctions and helping teach Korea how to get around sanctions. The criticism of that decision by the U.S. government was that he didn't teach North Korea anything that you couldn't have already found on YouTube or just Googled it, apparently. But granted, there is a little bit of naivete, like, hey, don't go to North Korea and teach about crypto transactions.
A lot of naivete. Yeah. Doing that.
But also at the same time, like, I he's not doing anything inherently illegal, right? Like, according to the United States, he was, but like, he was just promoting knowledge and education about this thing that is inherently open source, right? Like, they're going to learn about it anyways. And so he got arrested. This news story that's come out here is that he got arrested a couple years ago. The news story came out here that he had a trial. He's been hammering on the fact that he's not guilty, but his trial just started last Monday, and he opened up that trial with a guilty plea and a request for 6.5 years in jail, whereas the maximum sentence could be up to 20. So he requested six. The story has to go from there, but that's the gist of it.
Yeah, I think it's definitely sad, right? I think that Virgil, it seemed to me, had sort of a, you know, crypto utopian sort of vision. And I think he was going to North Korea, which is obviously one of the worst regimes on the planet, right? Very oppressive, like terrible regime, right? But I think Virgil was going there perhaps with good intentions, as far as like, you know, talking about cryptocurrency and the freedom this could provide and kind of the enhanced, you know, coordination it could provide, and didn't realize the full impact of his decisions, right? And the U.S. arrested him, I think, when he was coming home to visit family on Thanksgiving, coming to the U.S. And he's actually been in the same, for the last 2 months anyway, it's the same prison that Jeffrey Epstein was in for like the last 2 months. So it can't have been pleasant. I think there was an increasing amount of pressure on him to maybe plead guilty and not actually risk going to prison.
Yeah.
Yeah, 20 years in prison. So it's an unfortunate story because I don't think that what he was doing was legally wrong in the eyes of the U.S. government, right? I think his defense would say, hey, he was just teaching them things that like they could find online, and this is like an open conference, and this is all publicly available on YouTube. And for my part, I believe that that's true. But like, even if you think it was legally wrong, I mean, not morally wrong,
right?
And this is a very harsh sentence for, I guess, the stated crime of what Virgil may or may not have done. So kind of sad to see it, David, from my perspective. I don't know if there's anything more to say on it.
For those that listened to the Before Bitcoin series we did, where I read out Peter Pan's four-part series about the history of the cypherpunks, this is, in my mind, a continuation of that story of people that dedicate their lives towards cryptography and the social public systems, the public good systems that they create, and that ultimately runs and butts heads with nation states who don't like systems that are outside of their control, of which cryptography is inherently about that. So Amin Soleimani, who's the writer of this thread that we are looking at right now, starts this thread off with, his name is Virgil Griffith. It was fun to see everyone this week in New York, but I'll admit I was walking around with a hole in my heart and a looming sense of dread. Virgil's trial starts this Monday, #FreeVirgil. And then he goes through the history of both this case and also where it fits into the greater case of the story of the cypherpunks. He said, tweet number 12, he goes, all of us in crypto today are downstream of the original cypherpunks. We inherit their 50-year struggle to emancipate cryptography as a weapon to exclusively for militaries and provide it as a tool for individuals to use to protect their speech from illegitimate surveillance. And so I feel like maybe if I put, I never met Virgil Griffith. I don't know what he's like, but if I want to put my brain inside the mind of a cypherpunk, when you promote adoption of cryptography, you promote adoption of public resources that can escape oppression. And so maybe Virgil's mind was like, well, I'm going to go to North Korea, which is the site of the most oppression in the world, and hope this information leaks out. I don't know how that works.
I think from a cypherpunk's perspective, right, and from somebody who's deep into cryptography, you're going to a terrible, oppressive regime, and you're kind of preaching the gospel. You're kind of preaching like freedom technology. It's like going to a regime like this and talking about the value of freedom of speech. At least I think that's what it is like in Virgil's mind, right? And I just contrast this. It's very clear, I think, that the U.S. government wanted to make an example out of Virgil, right? Because clearly this is not actually a national security threat in any way, shape, or form, right? But like technically, you know, was a crime committed. They just absolutely wanted to make an example out of this. And I just contrast that with like, man, the amount of people who went to jail after the, you know, 2008 shenanigans that went on. It's like one guy, maybe,
zero people.
Right.
Yeah.
We're just talking about the Wells Fargo incident, you know, $73 million slap on the wrist. Right. Sometimes the punishment far exceeds the quote unquote crime committed. I think this may be one of those cases. So it's sort of a sad day in crypto.
Yeah. And just to tie this thread off, tweet number 17, Amin goes, today, the U.S. government treats cryptocurrency with as much superstition as it did with encryption in decades past. I really like that framing, treating crypto as superstition. In that context, they are attempting to cast Virgil's presentation as a military grade violation. But just like encryption, cryptocurrency will inevitably triumph. And for years now, when cryptocurrency is widely adopted across the globe, Virgil's presentation to North Korea will appear trivial. It will seem as silly as prosecuting someone for sharing the, quote, military secrets of HTTPS.
Absolutely. Well said. We'll leave it at that. Guys, we're going to cut to our sponsors, and then we'll be back with some takes of the week. Here they are.
The Aave protocol is a decentralized liquidity protocol on Ethereum, which allows users to supply and borrow certain crypto assets. Aave version 2 has a ton of cool features that makes using the Aave protocol even more powerful. With Aave, you can leverage the full power of DeFi Money Legos, yield, and composability all in one application. On Aave, there are a ton of assets that you can supply to the protocol in order to gain yield, and all of those same assets can also be borrowed from the protocol if you have supplied collateral. Here you can see me borrowing 200 USDC against my portfolio of a number of different DeFi tokens in ETH. I'll choose a variable interest rate because it's a lower rate than the stable interest rate option, but I could choose the stable interest rate option if I wanted to lock in that interest rate in permanently. V2 also features the ability for users to swap collateral without having to withdraw their assets, trade them on Uniswap, and then deposit them back into Aave. With Aave, users can do this in one seamless transaction, saving you time and gas costs. Check out the power of Aave at aave.com. That's A-A-V-E.com. Gemini is the world's most trusted cryptocurrency exchange. I've been a customer of Gemini since I first got into crypto in 2017, and it's been my main exchange of choice to make my crypto buys and sells. Gemini is available in all 50 states and in over 50 countries worldwide, and on Gemini there are markets for over 30 various different crypto assets, including many of the hot DeFi tokens, and it's one of the few exchanges that has liquid DAI markets. Gemini just launched their Earn program, where you can earn up to 7.4% interest on 26 various crypto assets. If you're tired of paying fees in DeFi, or you don't want to worry about DeFi exploits, but you still want to earn interest on your crypto assets, Gemini Earn is the product for you. Another product I'm stoked to get my hands on is the Gemini Crypto-Back Credit Card, which gives you 3% cash back on all of your purchases, but paid to you in your preferred crypto asset. When I get my Gemini credit card, I'm going to make sure that I get my cash back in ETH, so whenever I buy something, I get a little bit of ETH bonus back to me at the same time. You can open up a free account in under 3 minutes at gemini.com/gobankless. And if you trade more than $100 within the first 30 days after sign up, you'll be gifted a free $15 Bitcoin bonus. Check them out at gemini.com/gobankless.
All right, guys, we are back. Takes of the week. Let's start with this, David. This is a why don't you read this take and then I'll comment on it.
Read your own tweet. I don't want to read
my own tweet. That's too. This guy
Ryan Sean Adams. I don't know who he is. Never met him before. Says my advice for the U.S. 1, buy ETH and BTC for your treasury. 2, issue a Fed coin as an ERC-20 token. 3, become the world's most friendly DeFi jurisdiction. That's it. That's literally all you have to do to win the next chapter of the internet. Ryan, so what's this guy saying?
I mean, I couldn't have said it any better. I really do think those the three things that the U.S. needs to do, and if it just does those three things, hell, let's take two. Pick any two of those U.S. government and crypt, and you will be ahead of any other geographic jurisdiction on the planet. But I don't know. They're not doing any of these right now, which makes me worried. It's very simple. Some people think it's maybe more complicated than it is, but it really is this simple. Buy Bitcoin and ETH, issue a Fed coin of some sort as an ERC-20 on Ethereum, and just be really friendly to the talented engineers that are building DeFi in your country. Make it an appealing jurisdiction rather than pushing them outside, which is what they're doing right now.
Ryan, you've made it seem really, really simple, but that's because you skipped a step, which is step zero. Stop caring about all the incumbents and check your biases at the door.
That's why they're not doing
that's
it.
That's why it's not simple, right?
That's the tweet behind the tweet.
Yeah.
Man, some guy should tweet that out. All right, David, why don't you take this one? So this is interesting. I'll read the headline here. Mm-hmm. The SEC is threatening Coinbase to protect the public, but not in the way you think. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. This was a fantastic thread that you should absolutely go and check out yourself. We're not going to read the whole thing because it's a little bit long. But basically, OJuice_ETH talks about how because of trying to get the recovery going after their pandemic, the reserve requirement ratios for banks have gone from 10% to 0%. And if we go, we're going to start at tweet number 6 here. It goes, banks are more or less offering the same interest rates as each other. Right now, this is around 0.05%. For decades, there have not been any significant products with better rates whilst maintaining the convenience of the liquidity of the savings account until now. At a 5% interest rate, which is literally a 100x improvement than any savings account at a bank, is what Coinbase Earn has offered there, was going to offer. Except here's the problem. The problem is that the product is so good and it's such a no-brainer and can very realistically cause millions of depositors to move their savings to the Coinbase Earn product. And then the last tweet that we're going to read is, which means a concentration of dollars will suddenly be siphoned off into the institution Coinbase banks with, and every other bank would be left unable to meet that 10% reserve requirement. So what they are worried about is that Coinbase's products are going to be so incredibly successful that banks will never be able to actually return to a 10% collateralization requirement, which is saying something about the power of these the product, the Coinbase Earn product, that the SEC told them that they were going to sue them if they released that product.
Okay, so basically what he's saying is Coinbase Earn and crypto-related products like this are so good that it's going to slurp in all of the money from the banking system, cause the banks to collapse, and public, we don't want a banking system collapse like 2008 again, do we?
Right.
So we're protecting you from that.
The product was so good that it's going to collapse the economy.
It's going to collapse this banking, this strong foundational banking system that we've propped up. I think that could be it.
If good products collapse the economy, what the actual F are we doing?
Look, it goes back to the tweet that you were just talking about, right? Which is like, we don't want to disrupt the incumbents. That's why we're doing this. That's the tweet behind every tweet.
Too big to fail.
Behind every regulatory action that we're seeing that's aggressive towards crypto.
Literally not allowed to have nice things because it'll break all the bad things, and our entire society is built on bad things.
Well, you got a take on this, right? So this is actually, I don't know if it's your take or, this guy, davidhoffman.eth on Twitter, goes by the handle Trustless State, really smart guy.
He's got a cool punk.
Crypto is going to nerf the SEC, is what you said. And this goes back to a post you wrote earlier in the week. What did you mean by this?
Yeah, so Gary Gensler is coming at crypto super hard, right? Trying to, I think, more or less do everything he can to have more and more jurisdiction over crypto. Basically wants everything to be a security, right? And like, careful what you wish for, Gary. Like, if everything becomes a security, I don't think you realize how trivial it is to spin up a new token. Like, spin up a new ERC-20 token, spin up a new social token, a new DAO token, a new NFT that represents some in-game asset. Like, do you want all of those to be securities? Because what's more likely? Is it more likely that as a result of your desire to regulate all of these things, you actually have to ease back what it actually means to regulate those things? Or do you want everyone who ever issues a token to come knocking on your door, wait in line with their forms and say, hey, Gary Gensler, will you please give me my stamp? Like, what's gonna be more likely? I think it's going to be more likely that we're going to use this asset printing press, which is the ERC-20 or ERC-721 standard, and print a bajillion tokens. Gary's going to get real upset that they're all securities. But in order for him to legitimize what the SEC does as a regulatory body, they're just going to have to water down what it actually means to be a security, right? And so, like, sweet, like, this thing on my wall is a security. Like, yay, like, everything's a security.
The SEC does not want to have jurisdiction and regulate like a flaming sword of Gondor. Like, I that's what you're saying. Is they're biting off way too much,
right?
Like much more than they can chew, and it's actually going to completely, I guess,
water down the definition of a security. Yeah,
yeah. So if everything's a security, nothing is, guys. Let's take this next tweet, David. This is a meme tweet that some people took seriously from Bankless HQ Twitter. What is this?
Wait, is the headline isn't a meme? That's a real headline, right?
No, this is a meme, dude.
Oh, is it? Oh, okay. Well, I just ate the onion there in that case.
Love it. Got him.
All right. Well, okay. So the headline is that makes more sense as to actually who's actually the picture depicting. Lindsey Graham, I believe, is who that is. And then the bottom headline is Senate bans NFTs. Quote, the trend is bankrupting our youth, which I guess is a wink wink to the fact that like when you buy one NFT, the next thing that happens is you buy a second one. And then after that, you buy a third one. That's funny because I'm pretty sure the guy that tweeted this, Michael Wong, Wong. He's working on a crypto satire website, very much like The Onion. And we talked about how like our KPIs is like how many people can we get to... Do you know the term Eat the Onion?
Okay, now tell me.
It's what's like when somebody like reads an Onion article and then they take it seriously and they start blowing it up on Twitter. It's like,
so
oh yeah,
you just ate the onion.
I just ate the onion. Yeah. And so like the secret Skunkworks project out of the Bankless DAO is there's going to be a crypto satire website show, TV website, like news organization, very much like the Onion, that has meme only headlines. And the KPI is like, all right, how many times can we get people to like actually believe some of the BS headlines that we're going to write?
That's awesome.
And I'm the first victims, son of a bitch.
Yeah, well, here's the bottom behind this. This is a meme, guys, but the fact that people think it's real is exactly why Congress is failing us, right?
Well, there's a take.
This trend is bankrupting our youth. Senate bans NFTs. That's why Congress is failing us, because people actually believe that's true. Yep. I have another confession for you, David. This is my meme.
Is this yours? It's not Michael Wong's?
No. I was thinking about the satire thing and everything you said, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to throw a meme up. I did.
Sometimes the Ryan Sean Adams memes, they'll get you.
They're okay.
They're great. You just don't know. You just don't know when they come.
Yeah. It's a surprise every time. All right. Let's see this. Golden age of building, David. Mm-hmm. We'll look back on the 2020s and remember it as the golden age of building. This is another tweet that you put out there last week. What does this mean?
Yeah. Once upon a time in high school, I was really into the world of aviation. And in the world of aviation, there's the golden age of aviation, which was the 1930s. It's just when so much innovation happened. And a lot of the same technologies that we use today for flying and aviation was found in the 1930s. And I think that is what we are seeing here with the 2020s. When this decade is over, I think we're going to look back and be like, God, that was fun. Remember when there was cool, those were great times. Yeah. So like, it's actually a call to action for everyone listening just to like, hey, take a moment, reflect and remember what it's like to be where we are today, because we only get to do this once. And it's a good time regardless of all the regulator FOMO out there, or regulator FUD, excuse me.
FUD, yeah.
Yeah.
FOMO,
but with denial is FUD.
There you go.
And so, yeah, like, hey, we're in the golden age of building. There's cool stuff being built every single week. There's cool things happening. And I think we will look back with nostalgia on this era.
I totally agree. I'm super grateful to be here. Like, I'm grateful for all the listeners and, that sense of gratitude really, underlies, I think, the best projects. So they know they're early. They know they're doing something super cool. And it's really important to pause and just reflect on that sometimes, David. Good thought, man.
Absolutely. Thank
you. Let me ask you this. Last question of the week. What are you excited about?
Dude, okay. So I was at MCON last week and MCON 2 weeks ago and Mainnet in New York last week. Met a ton of cool people. And like the number of times that I would go up to one of the booths at Mazari Mainnet and just like meet with some people, somebody would say like, hey, like the reason why I got this job at company X or project Y is because like you and Ryan kept on like just yelling at me to get a job in crypto, either on the newsletter or on the podcast. Like you guys say like, hey, like you can do it. Like you can quit your legacy job and get a job in crypto. And so I did it. I think I ran into like, I think 7 people at Mainnet, and that's not even counting MCON.
Wow.
That said, like, hey, like I got a job in crypto because you guys at Bankless really encouraged me and inspired me to do that. And so I'm honored and humbled that people actually listen to us at all. And the fact that you guys, so many of you have gotten jobs in crypto is also thank you for helping turn this into the golden age of building, because the people that quit their jobs to take the step into crypto and take that risk are the people that are going to be pioneering so many more people in crypto in the future. So thank you for taking that leap. And if you are yet to take that leap, what are you waiting for? Like, don't miss out. It's a fun time.
As we say, it's people all the way down. Nothing more exciting than attracting good people to this space. That's absolutely awesome to hear, David.
Yeah. And before I ask you what you're excited about, Ryan, hey, look, according to Twitter, it's International Podcast Day. Look at that. Hey,
really? Well, happy International Podcast Day. Do you know what episode number this is?
This will be the weekly. I don't know what weekly roll-up number this is, but we are.
I mean, how many podcasts do you think we've done right now?
The actual Monday podcast will be number 89. I think State of the Nation, we're up to like 60-ish. Weekly roll-ups, we're at like 40.
Yeah, take 80, I guess, and like roughly like multiply that by 4.
Yeah,
that's probably what we're doing, because we do like,
well, no, because the podcast started earlier than all the other ones, so I say like three maybe. So I we're definitely over 200. Yeah, I think we're between 200 to 300.
Well, there you go. Okay, one day we'll count.
While you tell me what you're excited about, I'm gonna go to Libsyn and actually count. Yeah, I'm gonna look that up right now.
Do it. Okay.
What's your number?
My number is 364.
Okay. All right. Now tell me what you're excited about, Ryan.
All right. So while you're looking that up, what I'm excited about is also the Bankless podcast right now, because we
245.
Oh God, I was way up.
245 podcasts.
That's still good.
That's still great.
Still really good. Uh-huh. Now, how many hours is that? Multiply that by like
at least 1.5. Yeah.
1.5. Yeah. Multiply that by 1.5. All right. So we just secured a dream guest on Bankless, yeah, right? So like when we started the Bankless podcast, we had a list of like, I don't know, 5-10 names that were like, hey, we'll be doing it if we get this name. And now we got one of those names, another one off the list. I'm super excited about it. Not going to reveal it now, coming later in October. We'll have a big reveal soon, but we're very excited. And I think this just reflects as like one of the reasons I got into crypto and started like in, you know, crypto media. I got into crypto first. I thought all I wanted to do was invest, right? But then I realized like investment and kind of like narrative and learning about this stuff, we can learn about this stuff collectively, right? That's why we started Bankless. And that's why we started the Bankless podcast, to go on the journey together, because we can level up together. And one thing we realized very early, David, is if crypto is going to go mainstream, there has to be a big tent around it, right? It can't just be like this isolated cult of weirdos and geeks, right? It has to saturate itself into all areas of culture. And so that's why we're doing Bankless, is to saturate crypto and DeFi and these values into culture. So that means like politicians, that means regulators, that means musicians, that means investors, anybody who's out there, we want to get them on the Bankless podcast. And here's the beautiful thing about it, David, is like, if they adopt crypto protocols, okay, they adopt crypto values.
Ooh.
All right?
Ooh,
we tricked them. Wow. We got them. And that's how we change the world. Huh. As long as our values are embedded in the protocols, when they adopt crypto, they don't know it, but they're adopting crypto values. When they buy that NFT, what's that NFT secured by? What's it paying out, right? What's it propagating? Right. The economic security of Ethereum, which is a decentralized money system that embodies crypto values. So nice. This is a covert ops, man.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And we're doing it by getting these big guests, by like listeners tuning in, by you hitting the subscribe on YouTube. If you haven't subscribed yet, you are helping to propagate crypto values and crypto culture to the world. And that's what I'm excited about today.
That was a great answer. I'm looking forward to talking to that guest, of which we've named on this show before. So I will say that.
Of which we've named. So you can go back in past episodes.
All of them. Every single one. Start writing
all 200 and how many?
245, yeah.
Yeah, it shouldn't take long. Meme of the week. Meme of the week time. Let's do this. What are we looking at?
All right. We are looking at that famous picture of two people getting divorced and they're separating out their Beanie Babies. This was in the 90s, I believe. But instead of Beanie Babies, they're NFTs. So we got this couple. One's pulling out a cool cat. The other one's about to grab a meat bit. There's a chromey squiggle in there. If you get divorced, make sure you know who's getting what NFTs.
That is a very, very important point, sir. Yeah. That's awesome. All right, guys.
Don't get divorced.
Yeah.
Hopefully don't get divorced, but also hopefully our NFTs don't go by the way of Beanie Babies.
Yeah, is that what this is a prelude to? Yeah, what are those Beanie Babies worth now, huh?
Yeah. Oopsies.
Hilarious.
Too much inflation.
All right, guys. This has been the weekly roll-up. Of course, none of this has been financial advice. ETH is risky. DeFi is risky. Beanie Baby. I'm sorry. I mean, NFTs are risky as well. You could lose what you put in, but we are headed west. This is a frontier. It's not for everyone, but we're glad you're with us on the Bankless journey. Thanks a lot.
Hey, we hope you enjoyed the video. If you did, head over to Bankless HQ right now to develop your crypto investing skills and learn how to free yourself from banks and gain your financial independence. We recommend joining our daily newsletter, podcast, and community as a Bankless Premium subscriber to get the most out of your Bankless experience. You'll get access to our market analysis, our alpha leaks, and exclusive content, and even the Bankless token for airdrops, raffles, and unlocks. If you're interested in crypto, the Bankless community is where you want to be. Click the link in the description to become a Bankless Premium subscriber today. Also, don't forget to subscribe to the channel for in-depth interviews with industry leaders, Ask Me Anythings, and weekly roll-ups where we summarize the week in crypto and other fantastic content. Thanks everyone for watching and being on the journey as we build out the Bankless Nation.